Welcome, everybody. Omitofo. So I'm very happy to be here and want to give thanks, of course, to our founder, Master Shengyan, and all the Fashers who continue his practice and all sentient beings.
大家早上好，很高兴能够来到这里给大家继续分享佛法。首先还是很高兴，很感恩这里我们的创办人圣严法师以及所有的法师和义工菩萨们以及所有的众生。
So today I'm going to continue with the series on the Lotus Sutra, and I'm going to be speaking about Chapter 5, which is called the Parable of the Plants. And this chapter is a parable. It's in accord with all of the preceding chapters in the Lotus Sutra. So it conveys the teaching of the Great One Vehicle that includes all the other three vehicles, and it uses skillful or expedient means. And the chapter accomplishes this by a metaphor that compares the Buddha's teaching to a great rain cloud that waters and nourishes all kinds of flora, from small plants and herbs to great trees. And by analogy, it shows how the Dharma nourishes all sentient beings.
所以呢，今天我要继续我的《妙法莲花经》的系列讲座。今天我们将会讲到的是第五品药草御品。那么就像《妙法莲花经》前几期讲座所讲到的，我们前几期讲座前提到了前几品，提到了释迦牟尼佛开示的这个仪圣佛圣。并且提到了用方便方法来解释和传递这一圣的意思，并运用了很多比喻的方法。在这一品当中呢，释迦牟尼佛还会遇到用比喻的方法来解释这些大意，比如说他用到了法雨和云雨如何浇灌从大树、小树以及药草等等来比喻来。告诉我们佛法是如何能够领导和滋养所有众生的。
Okay. So in this talk, I'm going to try to accomplish a number of things, actually seven, which I'll mention, and so you can check to see if I've done it. And so to begin with, first and foremost, I'd like to create interest in practicing the Dharma and reading the Sutra.It's difficult and abstract in many ways, but the teaching is profound and helpful, and it's very rewarding. Second, I'd like to show and point out the nature of the Buddha's generosity and his relationship with us and our relationship with him. Third, I'd like to show the extraordinary level of his ability to convey a profound message through relatively simple means. Fourth,I'd like to show the importance of faith expressed in the chapter and the importance of faith in practice. Five, I'd like to show how we can best approach the sutra. Six, and show that this and all sutras are not textbooks. They are instructions, exhortations, tools for understanding the Dharma. And as such, even though they use words and concepts, the import, the meaning,goes far beyond the reach of ordinary words and concepts. And lastly, I'd like to show the practicality of the sutra in everyday life. And I think I get to them in my talk, not necessarily in that order.
今天呢，我想通过这个讲座呢，能达到以下几个目的。一共有七个目标，大家可以在听完讲座时候看看我有没有传递所有这些信息。第一个目的，我想达到目的是希望能够培养大家对佛法阅读对佛法和修行的兴趣，因为经文虽然是有些抽象，似乎有些难懂，但是他想传递的佛法本身其实是对我们非常有帮助的，虽然是比较深奥的，但对我们是很有帮助的。第二点呢，我也想展示释迦牟尼佛对我们的关系和我们之间的关系，他给予我们有这么好的佛法。第三点呢，我是想展示经文如何用简单的比喻来传递一个非常 深刻的信息，深刻的佛法。第四点呢，我是想通过这个讲座能够让大家感受到信心在我们修行中的重要性，以及对佛法起信这个重要性。第五点，我会提到我们在阅读经文的时候是应该用怎么样什么样的方法能够最好的来阅读经文。第六点呢，我想给大家展示的是这些经文啊，它并不是教条式的教科书，它其实是提供了很多的指导方法啊，有很多工具能够让我们来够理解佛法。所以呢他们虽然用了很多的文字啊、比喻啊或者概念啊，但实际上他想传递的信息是远远超过这些文字所能承载的意义的。最后第七点，我想传递的信息就是说，我想让大家能够了解到经文佛法能够如何能够在日常生活中得到运用。
Even though the parables of the plants chapter can stand alone by itself, it is much more meaningful to understand it in the context of the entire sutra, where the Buddha's great one vehicle is first proclaimed and the nature and function of expedient means are explained. Chapter 5 certainly continues to expand on this approach, teaching and shows us how the Buddha wishes us to approach the one vehicle path.
虽然这个第五品药草玉品呢，它也可以独立的来独立一成章来阅读和背诵持诵，但是呢如果你把它放在整个经文的上下文来理解的话呢，它就会更有意义。因为释迦牟尼佛一直在强调这个一圣佛圣以及它的性质，和以及用方便的法门来理解这个一圣。那么第五品呢，就是继续来阐述这个佛法的这一点的深远的意义，并且告诉我们释迦牟尼佛希望我们如何能够来理解和接触这一圣佛圣。
To catch people up, I'm going to give a summary of the first four chapters of the Lotus Sutra. And that way you'll be more prepared to understand how this fifth chapter works.
所以在讲第五品之前呢，我会先回顾一下前几品《妙法莲华经》前几品，这样子你有一个上下文的背景，可以更好的理解这一品的内容。
Okay, so this is complicated, a lot of facts here, but I'll just go over the chapters one by one. So, in the first chapter of the Lotus Sutra, the Buddha enters the samadhi of innumerable meanings.And actually, there's a sutra by that name that precedes the Lotus Sutra. But this is the samadhi associated with it. And he emits a beam of light from the tuft of hair between his eyes, which is called the orna. And he illuminates 18,000 realms in all six realms of existence. From ghosts and hells and humans and asuras and humans and gods, all the realms. The assembly is awed, and the Bodhisattva Maitreya asks Manjushri to explain what is happening, because this is such an unheard of, never before witnessed event. Manjushri relates a similar episode that occurred with a Buddha of the past that portended the delivery of the Dharma Flower Sutra, which is the actual name of the Lotus Sutra.And that proclaims the great vehicle of the Buddha, the one vehicle which will reveal his highest teachings. Manjushri announces that the Buddha will pour the rain of Dharma to satisfy those who seek the way. And this is a foreshadowing of the chapter on the parable of the plants that we will discuss today.
所以前几品内容比较复杂，我就大概一品一品的回顾一下。那么在第一品序言当中，法华经原文提到佛进入三昧，佛放眉间白毫相光，照东方万八千世界啊，六趣众生。那这个六趣包括了天人、阿修罗、畜生、恶鬼、地狱六劫。 所以大众呢看到佛有这样的瑞相呢都很惊异赞叹，然后弥勒菩萨就问文殊师利菩萨说，佛放这样的瑞相啊是什么意思啊？然后呢文殊师利菩萨就说，他曾经也看到过佛在过去是放这样的瑞相，那么一般就是说他要开眼大法，宣说法华经，宣说法华经所想阐述的一圣佛圣。那么在这一个佛圣当中呢，释迦牟尼佛将要揭示最深最高的佛法。那么文殊师利菩萨说道，佛将会下大法语，为求最高深佛法的人呢下大法语。在续品当中，其实就已经为这一品，就是药草玉品埋下了伏笔。
In the next chapter, expedient or skillful means, it becomes clear why the one Buddha vehicle is not elucidated. It's not really explained fully, because it is one and the same with the complete wisdom of the Buddha. And that wisdom is unknowable by anyone other than a Buddha. The Buddha tells Sariputra that the Buddhas appear in an evil world of five pollutions. The pollution of the age, or kalpa. The pollution of afflictions, the kleshas. The pollution of living beings. The pollution of views. And the pollution of lifespan. This may sound familiar to us in our contemporary times. The Buddha recognizes that he must use skillful means to help sentient beings who are usually too beset with their own problems to truly help themselves.
那么在第二品方便品当中呢，释迦牟尼佛就进一步阐述了为什么他没有直接来阐述一圣佛圣，而是用了很多方便的方法来解释佛法，来传递佛法。因为他说到这个佛圣呢非常的究竟和高深，只有佛能够，除了佛以外的人是没有办法直接理解其所有的意义的。所以佛告诉舍利弗提到，在这个五浊恶世啊，所谓的五浊指的是劫浊、烦恼浊、众生浊、见浊、命浊。在这个五浊恶世的众生呢，是很难一下子接受这个佛圣这个深奥的意义。这个其实就是说释迦牟尼佛能够意识到我们众生的根基，能够用善巧的方法来帮助所有的众生，那些帮助众生还不能直接接受佛圣的人，能够间接的通过方便的方法来了解佛法。
The Buddha says, I took a vow because I wanted all living beings to be equal to me without any distinctions. That is,He wants all sentient beings to become Buddhas, which is pretty good news. He fulfills this vow by using a variety of explanations, parables, and other kinds of expressions. These skillful means include parables, poetry, similes, causal explanations, passages of dialogues, any means to reach both dull and quick minds.Once sentient beings develop some faith and understanding about the one great vehicle, he offers a myriad of ways that sentient beings can follow the teaching of the great vehicle. In the second chapter of this sutra, this expedient means chapter, there is a long list of practices that explain how this can be accomplished. In other words, this is not just theory or philosophy. And these practices run the gamut.From building stupas, making drawings, playing instruments as offerings, to practices as simple as a child drawing in the sand, or even a simple nod of the head. These all must be done with sincerity. To all he offers the promise of becoming a Buddha.
所以释迦牟尼佛说，我是发愿要让所有的众生都能够和我一样，没有差异，就是让所有的众生都成佛。为了能够实现他这个愿望，能够他发的愿呢，他就要用一系列的方便善巧的法门，比如说用比喻的方式啊，讲故事的方式啊，寓言的方式呀，诗歌的方式啊， 还有对话的方式等等，善巧方便啊，能够让所有立根顿根的众生都能够理解他的他想阐述的佛法。当众生能够对佛圣有信心，并且能够有一定的理解程度的时候呢，他还会用很多方法让这些众生能够理解到最究竟的佛圣的意义。所以在《法华经》第二品，他举了一系列的方法，能够让末世的众生，五浊恶世的众生能够达到这个根基。他用了很多很多方法，说只要你能够建，比如说可以用建塔啊、画像啊、供养啊、赞叹啊，只要是发自内心的，这些一点一滴，他都会帮助你最终成佛。
But the Buddha knows that his teachings are hard to comprehend, and he knows that sentient beings must have both faith and understanding to succeed.Faith and understanding intertwine and reinforce one another, but sentient beings' capacity to understand and practice is limited. They can easily become discouraged. Thus, he expounds his teachings by parables and stories, which can parse a difficult teaching into more manageable and understandable explanations and practices.
但是释迦牟尼佛知道他的佛法，就是他想传递的佛法本身是很难理解的。他也知道，众生能够理解这样甚深的佛法，必须具足信仰、信心啊，和一定的理解力才会成功。所以呢，而且信仰跟本身的理解力又是相互加强、相互增进的。所以如果众生的理解能力现在还受到限制的话，他们很容易就失去信心。所以呢，他用了比喻啊，还有讲故事的方式，把很深奥的佛法用众生能够理解的啊，能够明白的意思啊，阐述出来。
One could say that the light emitted from the Buddha's urna, that tuft of hair between his eyes, that constitutes the first parable. But the first story that he relates is the parable of the burning house, a very famous story in Buddhism. And this tells the story of a group of children who represent all sentient beings in samsara. And these children live in their father's house, the father being the Buddha. The house bursts into flames and the children are unwilling to see the danger they are in because they are utterly enmeshed in their childish games.
或许你可以说在法华经当中，佛从眉间放白毫相光已经是一个第一个比喻了。但是一般来说认为法华经的第一个比喻所讲的故事是火宅喻。火宅喻很有名啊，主要就是讲有一群小孩在一个着火的房子里玩，这群小孩呢，就是代表着我们在这个五浊恶世在轮回的众生啊。由于这群小孩在房子里玩得太开心，他玩着自己的游戏玩得太开心，完全没有意识到房子已经着火，而且本身存在很大的危险。
The father has no other recourse but to trick these children.To leave the burning house. He does this by promising them playthings that he knows will entice them. Ox, deer, and goat carts, which represent the Buddha's earlier teachings of the three vehicles, those of sound hearers, Pratyeka Buddhas, and Bodhisattvas. When the children flee the house, they are given a great vehicle drawn by a white ox,that is a far greater prize than anything they could have imagined.
所以呢，这个在比喻这个火宅喻当中，这位长者父亲呢，这些小孩的父亲们没有其他的办法能够把小孩带出这个火宅，所以他就哄他们说，他知道这些小孩很喜欢玩，那么他就说啊，外面房子外面有很好玩的牛车、鹿车和羊车，用这些孩子们喜欢的吸引的东西来吸引他们逃出火宅。那么在这里，牛车、羊车、鹿车呢，就代表了 佛释迦牟尼佛早期开示的三圣声闻缘觉和菩萨圣。那么当孩子们逃离这个火宅的时候呢，他们才意识到他们给他们的并不是这三车，而是一个大白牛车，且这个大白牛车比他们所想象的牛车、鹿车、羊车都要好得多得多。
The flames represent the flames of samsara. The children were utterly ignorant about the danger the fire posed. The Buddha announced that this great vehicle represents his true teachings, the great vehicle that he gave his children, and those teachings both include and transcend all of his previous teachings. The Buddha's wisdom transforms into something inclusive of all previous teachings and all beings, and of course includes and transcends. The teaching of the great vehicle is utterly new, and it astonishes the arhats who have followed his previous teaching for years.
所以在这里火宅的火就是比喻代表着我们在这个娑婆世界的各种痛苦。那么小孩呢，在这个比喻当中，他们是非常的无知，他们对大火所会对他们造成的危险一无所知。所以释迦牟尼佛在这边宣称的佛圣，就是最后给他们的大白牛车，就代表了他的真正想要宣说的最高最究竟的佛圣，而且这个佛圣能够包容他以前所宣讲的所有的佛法。
The next parable, which is chapter 4, is the parable of the wayward son. And that presents the testimony of those who have discovered the Buddha's wisdom and found it to be true. The burning house was told, that story was told by the Buddha himself. This story is told by four arhats who have realized the truth of the one vehicle. They are old now, and they testify that it was not easy to see the truth of the teachings at first. Much hard work was needed.
所以在讲火宅喻的时候呢，最后提到佛圣的时候，很多大阿罗汉呢都感到很惊讶，因为大阿罗汉已经遵照佛法以前开示的声闻缘觉圣已经修行很多年了。那么在第二个比喻当中，第二章的比喻当中，他提到了一个穷子喻，释迦牟尼佛提到穷子喻，这里穷子喻呢，就是说这个穷子就代表了最终众生怎么能够发现释迦牟尼佛真正的智慧。这个火宅喻是由释迦牟尼佛自己宣讲的。那么这个第二个故事，这个穷子喻呢，是有四个大阿罗汉听到，就是能够见识到最终的佛圣之后，悟到最终佛圣之后，这个四个大阿罗汉来讲的。他们在宣讲的时候呢，也说到他们自己的经历就可以证明啊，这个佛圣最终最究竟的佛意呢是很深奥，不是那么这么容易理解的，更别提直接用来修行了。
In this story, a young man who is representative of all beings in samsara inexplicably runs away from his true home and his birthright, and he falls on hard times. He has no recollection of who his father is, but his father has never forgotten him. The father, once again the Buddha, must use skillful means to get the son to wake up to his true worth and true identity and true connection to his father. To do this, he gently coerces his son to work in his, that is the father's, successful business.And that represents the true Dharma. Go ahead.
所以在穷子喻当中呢，这个穷子啊，就是代表了我们所有娑婆世界的众生。不知因为什么原因，这个穷子呢逃离了他自己真实的家，并且呢，逃离之后就变得很穷。然后他也记不得自己的父亲是谁。 但是他的父亲在这个比喻当中就是代表释迦牟尼佛，就是从来没有忘记过自己的儿子，而且用了很多方便善巧的方法，让这个儿子能够重新觉悟，觉醒到自己真正的价值和自己真正的身份。
The father must use skillful means, once again there's that expedient means again, to convince his son, because the son has sunk to a very low state and can see no alternative but a life of menial work. The son literally shovels dung on his father's farm until his trust, confidence, and feelings of self-worth grow, and till the father can finally reveal that he is actually the son's long-lost father, and he can share his enormous wealth, the true Dharma, with his son.
那么这位父亲呢是拥有巨大的财富的，这里就象征着佛法。那么这位父亲就必须要用很多方便善巧的方法，能够使他这个穷子啊能够慢慢的接受幸福，对自己重新产生这个自信和意识到自我价值。那么在这之前呢，这个方便善巧的过程就是这个穷子只能从推分啊开始，直到他能够意识到有这样的自信，有这样接受能力的时候，父亲才揭示原来的这个穷子就是他失散多年的儿子，并且这个穷子拥有巨大的财富。
Okay, that was a lot of information of about the first four chapters. But I think if you can absorb some of it's helpful in creating a segue into what I'm going to be talking about now, which is the main subject of the talk, namely chapter 5.
所以刚刚我们到目前所讲的都是前几品的回顾，有很多的信息但是我觉得是值得的，因为这样子接下来我们讲第五品的时候就比较容易理解。
And this chapter, as you'll see, directly relates to the last chapter about the wayward son. So, when it begins, the Buddha is once again expressing the inexpressible in the form of a story. The Buddha tells us that he has our back.That he supports us and wants us to go to true liberation, Buddhahood. This chapter is entirely positive, comforting, and inspiring. There are no untoward events such as a fire or a disobedient son. There is nothing but the pure reign of Dharma in this chapter.
好，我们现在就开始正式讲第五品这个药草御品。在这一品刚开始的时候呢，释迦牟尼佛又一次的用故事的形式来宣说不可说的甚深法义。释迦牟尼佛告诉我们，他会支持我们，会把我们最终所有的众生都带到佛的果位。所以这一章总体来讲是非常正面的，是给予我们很多的安慰和鼓舞的。因为在这里边也没有其他像前几品提到的大火呀，或者是穷子啊等等。在这里这一品里边提到的只有法语。
Okay, now this chapter, the Buddha addresses Mahakashyapa, one of his foremost disciples and one of those four arhats, and he's directly referencing the story that I just told you about the wayward son. So, and now I'm quoting directly from the sutra. Well done.Well done, Kashyapa. You have done well at describing the real merits and blessings of the Tathagata. Truly, they are as you say. The Tathagata manifests innumerable, unlimited, countless blessings. If you describe them for innumerable hundreds of millions of kalpas, you could not finish.
So, in here, the fifth chapter is mentioned. 尔时世尊告迦舍摩诃迦舍及诸大弟子：善哉善哉，迦舍善说如来真实功德，诚如所言，如来富有无量无边阿僧祇功德，汝等于无量亿劫说不能尽。
So the Buddha is congratulating Kashyapa, as the main representative of these four arhats, and He's congratulating because he has told the story of how the Dharma worked for him and how they came to embrace the new teaching. And the Buddha acknowledges the truth of the story and the blessings that they have received in following the great vehicle to fruition.
在这一品刚开始的时候呢，释迦牟尼佛恭喜赞叹了摩诃迦摄，因为他是代表了这个四个大阿罗汉，他作为预言的讲述者，他能够显示他是如何和其他阿罗汉是如何能够接受这个甚深的佛法，所以释迦牟尼佛赞叹他们的故事，并且说他们会有无量的功德，因为他们能够理解这个佛身。
So the Buddha speaks about merits and blessings, and they are important in understanding the Lotus Sutra and the practices associated with it. So I'm going to digress and speak about that subject for a moment. So the Chinese word for merit is gunde, and or punya in Sanskrit. Gunde can be translated in a number of ways as merits, blessings, virtue, or achievement. This is a very important, complex, and nuanced term in Buddhism. It is considered a protective force that is inextricably connected to ethics and morality. Acts of body, speech, and mind can generate gunde, which I will refer to here from here on as merit. So merit is affected by and in turn affects one's karma. It is a change of outlook and a positive force that can encourage wholesome behavior. So it is deeply connected to wisdom and related teachings. The Buddha's praise of Kashyapa and his brethren has deep significance. It demonstrates the incalculable merit of the Buddha's works through sentient beings.
所以在这里释迦牟尼佛提到功德，那么我们这里就简单的阐述一下在中文的语义下这个功德的意思。那么功德在Sanskrit 这个当中是讲到叫 Pinya， 然后如果你用这个翻译 Google 翻译的话，谷歌翻译的话，你可以把功德翻译英语的话，它有很多英文词可以跟这个中文的功德相对应。但是功德这两个字，这个本身是要结合上下文语境的，是一个非常重要的，也是比较复杂，有很多不同层面的意思的一个佛教术语。它可以被理解为是一种无法解释的，跟你的道德和操守相关的一股正向的保护的力量，也可以是说是由你的身口意来产生的这样一种功德。但是而且功德还会影响到每个人的业力，所以它可以改变你的人生，可以有正向的激励你的善行，同时它也和智慧还有佛法的很多的教义是有很深的联系的。所以在这里释迦牟尼佛赞叹摩诃迦摄和其他诸大弟子的功德，可见这也是也是一种佛法在众生的身上如何的起作用的一种表现。
We in the West might hear the term merit and bring to mind some material or immaterial reward. The merit that the Buddha speaks of not only includes receiving but giving.Merit can be shared and transferred to others. The sincere following of the Buddha's teachings generates great merit, and the ramifications of this merit are incalculable and impossible to perceive for an ordinary sentient being. And just want to reinforce that many terms like merit in Buddhism kind of interplay and inter-are. So the definitions are not always so easily...definable.
所以但我们西方的人而言，当我们听到功德这两个字呢，似乎都是和能够得到一些有价值的或有形或者无形的奖赏相关的。但实际上在这里佛法所讲述的功德并不仅仅只包括得到一些，而是更多的是给予，因为功德是可以跟众生分享的，还可以回向给其他众生。 所以在这里边就比如说你能够遵循佛法的教义，能够身体力行的话，会产生很多很多无量的功德。那么在这种语境下，功德很难用一两个对应的单词在这个语境当中解释得很清楚，它是比较复杂的。
So the Buddha continues, once again reading from the sutra directly. You should know, Kashyapa, that the Tathagata is the king of the Dharma. Nothing he teaches is empty or in vain. He preaches all the teachings through wise use of skillful means. All that he teaches leads to a state of comprehensive wisdom. The Tathagata sees and knows where the teachings lead, penetrating them.Without hindrance, he understands the deepest workings of all living beings. Moreover, having the most thorough understanding of all the teachings, he reveals his all-encompassing wisdom to living beings.
我们释迦牟尼佛继续讲到，这个佛经的原文是这样说的：迦舍当知，如来是诸法之王，若有所说，皆不虚也。与一切法以智方便而演说之，其所说法皆悉道于一切智底。如来观之一切诸法之所归去，亦知一切众生身心所行通达无碍，又于诸法究竟明了，视诸众生一切智慧。
When the Buddha uses the word wisdom, it can be confusing. Once again, I'm going to go into some of the nuances and difficulties ofdealing with Buddhist terms here. Wisdom is a technical term in Buddhism. In everyday language, wisdom implies knowledge and facts, and we are impressed with people who have great collections of both. But there's a saying that if you want knowledge, learn something new every day. And if you want wisdom, let go of something every day. So it's a very different understanding.Wisdom in Buddhist practice, among other things, is the dropping of attachment and self-clinging. It is to see past the obscurations that cause us to look at everything we experience in terms of pain and pleasure, gain and loss, fame and disrepute, praise and blame, the so-called eight winds. Wisdom is certainly something that we can acquire, but not all at once.And certainly not all-encompassing wisdom, not the wisdom that the Buddha is speaking about here in the Lotus Sutra. As an analogy, just look at how difficult it is to keep abreast of the news of the day in our everyday lives, let alone your own personal affairs. And as I said, wisdom is not about picking things up, but letting go of attachments.
那么在这边，释迦牟尼佛用到的智慧这个词啊，我们还要有，因为比较容易让人产生误解和困惑，所以我们要再讲一讲。智慧是一个佛法的术语。那么在我们日常生活当中呢，可能我们当提到智慧的时候，会和知识和所掌握的信息事实联系起来。比如说啊，我们当中的有些人啊，非常很有知识，了解到很多的信息，我们觉得印象很深刻，这是一种说法。但是当你需要了解一样东西，需要拥有知识的时候呢，你会去学习，比如说一些新的事物，日常生活中新事物你需要学习。但是当我们说要有智慧的时候，其实是要放下一些东西。所以智慧在佛法修行当中呢，它和其他很多的名相一样，它的意思是说要放下你的执着，放下你对自我的这种抓取和执着。所以它是告诉我们，为什么看事物呢，受到了这种八风的影响，受到了我们自己的得失心啊，快乐成就，快乐痛苦啊，或者是说名誉啊，名等财富啊等等这些这些得失心和判断的影响，分别心的影响，所以我们对看事物并不能很有智慧的来看待。所以智慧并不是我们一下子能够全部能够获得的， 它也我们所拥有的智慧也不是像佛法这样的一切种子。就像举个例子来说，我们现在的生活信息更新也很快，我们要能够跟上时代的步伐，我们都觉得很费力了。而且这我所讲的智慧呢，并不是说要得到很多东西或者学很多东西，而更多的是讲你如何能够放下很多执着。
There are certain statements that the Buddha makes that might sound arrogant or egotistical, strangely enough. However, the Buddha is not just some proponent of a cause or a product. Having utterly transcended self-concern and worry, he is an emblem and embodiment of truth. In a pre-literate society, which is after all, where he was when he, was living in India, where there are no reference libraries or laptops to Google his name and to find out, you know, to get his resume and download it. He tells you exactly who he is. He is one with the Dharma. So it is fitting that he says that he is the king of the Dharma. He also assures the assembly that he understands how the Dharma works and how it is wisely operative in helping sentient beings. But it is important to note that all his all-encompassing wisdom is imparted through skillful means, effective but often below or outside our awareness. Sentient beings cannot handle the complete wisdom of a Buddha. This is stated over and over again in the sutra. The Buddha, however, can work with a person's karma and suggest the right tweak to lead him or her towards wholesome, beneficial behavior.
所以在我们刚刚讲到这段经文的原文当中，因为释迦牟尼佛说到他是诸法之王，等等有可以有一切智慧。乍一听这些陈述似乎觉得好像很这个演说者很自大或者有些自我，但是呢我们仔细来看一下会发现佛其实说的只是如实的在宣说一些事实，因为在一个信息不是很发达的年代，你要想了解佛的背景不是像我们现在这样很简单的可以上网谷歌一下或者去图书馆看一看或者下载一份佛陀的这个简历生平背景能够知道哦这个人是谁，他为什么会拥有佛法，他为什么是诸法之王。那么在那个印度古印度这个年代没有这些信息传播的手段，所以佛必须靠他自己来宣说这些关于他的事实。所以乍一听好像以为很自大，实际上他是在宣说一些事实。那么佛呢一遍又一遍的强调佛法的深深的这个一切智慧众生是没有办法一切究竟的来明了的，但是佛却可以用他的智慧和来洞察每一个众生的业力和根基，能够帮助每一个众生从他的层次出发来循循善诱来理解佛法，最终能够引向佛果。
So up until now, we've been speaking in pretty lofty terms, using lots of concepts and fairly profound teachings, and I have talked about skillful means. So now I just want to share a story that was shared with me by a Dharma teacher, Tom Campbell, and just to show how skillful means might actually work, I mean, as a practical thing. So let's say the Buddha encounters a thief. What does the Buddha say to him? He could put him in jail. He could turn him over to the authorities. Or he could say, steal less. The Buddha could say that every time you steal, you're doing yourself enormous harm. It would be better if you did less harm to yourself as well as to others. The thief may have all sorts of obscurations, so it would be difficult for an ordinary sentient being to intercede with him. But if the thief can listen to the Buddha's words and recognize the harm that he is doing now and in the future, then there is hope.
我们刚刚所讲的都是一些比较抽象的经文，所以我们现在来举一个例子来说说看。那么这个例子是另一位佛法老师跟我提到的。他说，比如我们假设释迦牟尼佛遇到了一个小偷，那么释迦牟尼佛可以跟小偷说什么呢？他可以把这个小偷关到监狱里，他也可以把小偷交给警方，或者他可以劝说这个小偷少偷一些东西。佛可以告诉这个小偷说，你每偷一次呢，都会对你自己造成很大的伤害，而且如果你能少偷一点的话，不仅对你，对搭他人都是很有好处的。但是这个小偷可能有各种各样的障碍，所以他可能很难去理解佛这个说的意思。但是如果这个小偷能够听进去佛的话，能够意识到他现在所作所为对他自己和现在和将来都会造成很大伤害的时候，那么这就有希望了。
So when the thief steals, it causes him to solidify terrible inclinations and habitual tendencies within himself. And let's say the thief wakes up to what's going on, and he says, "What can I do about this?" The Buddha might say, "Let's talk of ways to reduce your craving, so you won't steal all the time." Right? That's the kind of the source of stealing. The Buddha might say, "Let's reduce this, and let's start with talking about things that you've stolen, and perhaps giving them back or giving them away." So generosity is a cure for craving. The Buddha can help him with his karmic inclinations, and then he won't have to be fearful all the time and worry about being apprehended by the authorities. It's about not being cunning and always trying to get an edge on somebody else, and that may bring about happiness. There is a skill to remove other people's obstacles, and that is something that the Buddha possesses.
所以呢，如果这个小偷能够听进佛的话呢，那么就有希望。因为盗窃这个行为啊，它会在他身上会产生一遍又一遍的，慢慢会培养成为一种习气和一种倾向性。所以我们假设有一天这个小偷突然意识到自己是不对的，他想要停止这种倾向性，他就会说，我能够做什么呢？那么佛这个时候可能就会说，他说你可以，我们有很多方法可以试图解决这个问题，你可以先把你的欲望来降低一些，这样你就不会一直需要盗窃来满足你自己的欲望。比如说我们也可以把你偷的东西呢先还回去，或者把你偷的东西呢布施给别人，因为布施是用来对治人的欲望的一个很好的方法。那么佛陀在这边就是在一步一步的帮助他克服自己的业力产生的种种习气，这样子呢，他也不会，这个小偷就不会一天到晚提心吊胆的害怕被警方抓到。所以这里就是用到了一些方法，能够给一个人呢减少伤害，最终给他带来快乐，也是一种善巧的方法，来最终帮助这个人呢减轻自己的障碍。
Continuing with these reading from the sutra, Kashyapa, suppose that in the 3,000 great thousandfold world, in other words, the universe, growing on mountains, along rivers and streams, in valleys and in different soils, there are plants, trees, thickets, forests, and medicinal herbs of various and numerous kinds with different names and colors. A dense cloud spreads over all of them, covering the whole great 3,000-fold world, and pours on all equally and at the same time. The moisture reaches all the plants, trees, thickets, forests, and medicinal herbs with their little roots, little stems, little branches, their medium-sized roots, medium-sized stems, medium-sized branches, medium-sized leaves, their big roots, big stems, big branches, and big leaves. Every tree, large or small, according to whether it is superior, middling, or inferior, receives its share. The rain from the same cloud goes to each according to its nature and kind, causing it to grow, bloom, and bear fruit. So all grow in the same soil and are moistened by the same rain. These plants, however, are all different.
我们接下去再看经文原文。迦舍譬如三千大千世界山川溪谷土地，所生桧木丛林及株药草，种类若干，各色各异，密云弥布，遍覆三千大千世界，一时等数，其则普洽。桧木丛林及株药草，小根小茎，小枝小叶，中根中茎，中枝中叶，大根大茎，大枝大叶，株数大小随上中下各有所受，一云所语，称其种性而得生长华果复实，虽一地所生，一雨所润，而诸草木各有差别。
In this last section of the sutra I just read, on the surface there's hardly a reference to Buddha or Buddhism or practice or anything. It's true that the Buddha is talking about the entire universe, but you can almost look at this as a description of a well-ordered ecosystem. Somebody could be taking a class in ecology and read some of this. But that would be, you'd have to be confining your view to our world alone in order to sort of put this into context.
像这一段经文呢，在表面上来看的话，好像完全没有提到佛法，只是说佛在谈一个生态系统，仿佛如果你是在大学修这个生物课，你如果你把你的对这段的理解仅仅限于它的描述生态系统的话，你会觉得好像是在讲生态系统，但实际上呢，佛是在讲整个大千世界。
However, if you look deeper, you can perceive some very subtle references to Buddhist teaching, causes and conditions, and interbeing. Plants flourish through a variety of conditions. The Buddha also draws attention to sameness and diversity. The one great cloud enables every variety of plant to grow.
但是如果你仔细地体会一下这一段经文的寓意的话，你会发现它有很多地方是很巧妙的在比喻佛法，比如说提到佛法，有隐喻到佛法的因缘因果，他们是如何相互作用，以及这些树木植物的生长需要一系列的因缘的具足，佛法这里佛也提到了他们的同一性和多元性。
To illustrate this idea of sameness and diversity, I offer this Japanese invocation, which says, I take refuge in the harmony of sentient beings. I take refuge in the diversity of sentient beings. I take refuge in the harmony and diversity of sentient beings. So in Buddha Dharma, there are contradictions that are not really contradictions.
就像在日本的这个一支佛法当中呢，他们会唱诵到这样，他说我皈依众生的和谐度和谐性，我皈依众生的多元性，我皈依众生的多元和和谐性。
Okay, now the sutra I'll continue to read from and the narrative shifts. He continuesthe Buddha continues with the metaphor of the cloud raining upon the world, but now he talks about sentient beings and the one great Dharma more explicitly. So he says, You should understand, Kashyapa, that the Tathagata is like this. He appears in the world like the rising of a great cloud, and he extends his great voice universally over the world of human and heavenly beings and asuras.Just like the great cloud covers the 3,000 great thousandfold world. In the great assembly, he speaks these words, I am a Tathagata, worthy of offerings, truly awakened, fully clear in conduct, well gone, understanding the world, unexcelled leader, trainer of men, teacher of heavenly beings and people, Buddha, world honored one.
那么接下来呢，经文就一改前面的隐喻，就直接提到了这个是如何对应佛法的了。经文提到，迦舍当知，如来亦复如是，出现于世如大云起， 以大音声普遍世界天人阿修罗如彼大云遍覆三千大千国土与大众中而唱誓言我是如来应供正遍知明行足善事世间解无上师调御丈夫天人师佛世尊。
As in most metaphors in the Lotus Sutra, the cloud metaphor moves beyond normal logic and understanding, since clouds don't have voices. But this is how the sutra communicates, in ways that we can understand, and then in ways that point beyond our understanding.
所以就像法华经当中有很多的比喻一样，这个用云，这个大云所做的比喻呢，其实跟我们日常生活的逻辑也有也是超越了我们日常生活的逻辑和理解的。比如说一般云是不会说话的，不会有声音发出声音，但是呢这个就是经文是这样描述的，也是让我们能够便于理解，同时呢也是超越我们一般的日常生活经验。
That the Buddha uses an image of a dense cloud rather than the sun to describe the workings of his Dharma is a notable feature of the Lotus Sutra.Elsewhere, the Buddha's teachings are described as the sun, bringing the light of wisdom to all. One epithet of the Buddha is the cousin of the sun. So in the formless verse from the Platform Sutra, it begins, Shuo Tuang Deng Ji Xin Tung, Ruer Chu Xu Kung. Mastery of discourse and mastery of mind is like the sun in empty space.
Right. So, what is speaking English? Okay.
Fooled you.
Well,
okay.
对。Yeah. Now we reverse our roles. 在这里在法华经当中呢佛经用大云来做比喻呢也是法华经的一个特色。因为在其他大部分的佛经当中经文当中都是用太阳用阳日阳光来做比喻比喻佛法的。比如说在六祖坛经的无相颂当中就有这样一个偈子说到说通即心通如日处虚空。
Okay. So the sun together with empty space is used as a metaphor to describe mastery of discourse and mind. But in this chapter from the Lotus Sutra,In the verse section, which is after the section that we're dealing with today, it seems to describe the sun as an impediment. So, it says, the sun's rays are hidden, and the earth becomes cool. The cloud descends and spreads, as if it might be touched, or plucked from the sky, or in another translation, as if you could actually touch it.
所以在在这里边像我刚刚提到六祖坛经无相颂当中提到的这个太阳是被比喻为佛法的。但是在法华经的这一段经文当中呢是相反。它其实是把日呢日光反而是描述为一种障碍。它是在比如说在法华经药草一品第五品的这个寄送文当中有这样一句话它提到。日光掩蔽地上清凉爱逮垂布如可承揽
The sun may be a symbol of enlightenment, but the Lotus Sutra speaks of the great vehicle that is beyond the ordinary understanding of what constitutes enlightenment, nirvana, and extinction. This wisdom teaching is penetrative. The water is not only goes down to the roots, but it goes down to the soil, which together with the plants,is representative of causes and conditions, of potential and realization. Plants and soil arise and decay, nurturing each other. Past, present, and future interpenetrate.
所以太阳日有些时候是可以被用来作为开悟的一个象征。但是在法华经当中呢因为它是宣说佛圣它超越了一般我们对开悟的理解啊，还有涅槃啊等等，所以在这里它的智慧的佛法是很有穿越性的，有渗透力的。比如说这个水啊，不仅仅会渗透到植物的根部，它还可以渗透到泥土当中，然后和植物交相辉映。在这里一系列的 这个雨水啊渗透啊都代表了很多的因缘，还有我们潜在的能够开悟的这个潜力。所以在这里植物和水呢都会慢慢的升起有生灭然后相互的滋润，所以过去现在和将来的因缘都是相互联系相互渗透的。
Notice that the cloud covers all beings, although here the Buddha is concentrating on the higher realms, humans, asuras, and heavenly beings. And he also proclaims the epithets that apply to him, which I mentioned earlier, which I'll skip repeating.
所以我们可以注意在这里边呢，这个云啊，其实它覆盖了所有的众生，就像虽然在宣说佛法时候佛重点是在对上三层，就是六阶的上三层，比如说人啊天人啊修罗这三道在讲，但是他同样的也说到在他的所有的佛的名号当中是包含了有所有十个名号。
So next the Buddha states reading from the sutra, those who have not yet been saved will be saved, those who have notbeen set free will be set free. Those who have had no rest will have rest. Those who have not yet attained nirvana will attain nirvana.
所以经文接下来提到未度者令度，未解者令解，未安者令安，未涅槃者令得涅槃。
The Buddha is not exactly talking about the three vehicles, although he may be indirectly alluding to them. He is talking aboutthree stages in practice. First, the path of views, the path of practice, and finally, resolution. This alludes to the entirety of the path, from first hearing the Dharma, cultivating and practicing it, and finally coming to realization. The Buddha is promising progress for all, regardless of what stage you find yourself in. The Buddha recognizes all these stages, but he and his message, are not attached to them.
在这里呢，在这段经文，我觉得佛法并不是佛并不是是指以前提到的三圣，声闻缘觉菩萨圣。他这里其实是在隐喻我们修行的不同的阶段，比如说首先是闻，在听闻佛法的阶段，然后是思考佛法，然后是修行然后是证悟佛法。所以他这里提到的应该是闻思修证这个不同的众生在所处的修习佛法的不同的阶段。但是无论如何佛认为他知道所有的阶段，可以不管是你在哪一阶段的众生，他都可以对你有所帮助，可以让你成佛。所以但是他的佛事的这个信息呢也并不执着于你所处的阶段。
The Buddha declares, reading from the sutra,I understand both the present world and the worlds to come as they really are. I am the one who knows all, one who sees all, one who knows the way, one who opens the way, one who teaches the way. Come to me, all you human heavenly beings and assurers, and hear the Dharma.
经文接下来就提到，今世后世如实知之，我是一切知者，一切见者，知道者，开道者，说道者，如等天人阿修罗众皆因到此未听法故。
The Buddha is not talking about prophecy here. He has seen the absolute nature of mind, which is unchanging from past to present to future. He's not only giving verbal assurance, but an actual invitation. This is certainly a point in the sutra where you can see it's not a textbook.It is not simply a collection of facts and ideas.
所以这一段呢，佛并不是在谈一些预言，他实际上是已经看到了心的真实的本性，是如何，就是从过去、未来、过去、现在、将来是不会改变的这个我们心性的本性。所以他不仅仅是在给大家信心，口头上的信心，更像是一个实际的邀请。
So the Buddha issued an invitation, and now he's going to show the results of that invitation. So he's narrating an event in the sutra, which of course is trans-historical and trans-geographical. So the Buddha declares, or the sutra declares, at that moment, to hear the Dharma, innumerable tens of millions of billions of kinds of living beings come to where the Buddha is. Then the Tathagata, observing the natural power of all these beings, whether they were keen or dull, persevering or lazy, taught the Dharma to them according to their abilities in an unlimited variety of ways, so that all rejoiced and were greatly enriched. All these living beings, having heard this Dharma, gained peace and security in their present lives, and afterwards were born in good circumstances, joyful in the way and in being able to hear again the Dharma. Having heard the Dharma, they will be freed from obstacles and, according to their capacity for the teachings, will gradually enter the way.
所以前一段经文是佛就发出了这样一个真实的邀请。当然这个接下来发生的事件呢就是佛经接下来说到的，这是当然是会超越历史，超越地域的限制。佛经的原文说到，尔时无数千万亿众众生来至佛所而听法，如来与时观视众生诸根利钝，精进懈怠，随其所堪而为说法，种种无量，皆令欢喜快得善利。是诸众生闻是法已，现世安隐，后世善处，以道受乐，亦得闻法。即闻法已，离诸障碍，与诸法中人力所能见得入道。
The sutra says, at that moment. What moment was that? Was it some 2,500 years ago? Did the moment or that point in time end? Is the moment continuing? Is the moment right now at this moment? True mind and the Buddha's teaching are not time or space dependent. The Buddha does not say when Dharma reign begins, and there is no end indication that it will ever end.
在经文当中提到尔时，那么这个到底是什么时候呢？是指这个那一瞬间，是指2500年前佛在讲法那一瞬间，还是指这个现在，还是这个时候什么时候开始，什么时候结束了呢？还是还在进行当中呢？的确，因为我们心和佛法的教化其实是没有时间和空间的这种限制的。那么佛法释迦牟尼佛并没有说这个大法语是在什么时候开始下，也没有暗示这个大法语什么时候会停止。
Now there's a slight question about logistics. The sutra says that innumerable tens of millions of billions of kinds of living beings come to where the Buddha is. How did they get there? Did they take Ubers or make reservations at hotel.com? It says they came to where the Buddha is. Where would that be? The Earth or another planet? No. The sutra is speaking on what we in the West would call an entirely metaphysical plane that disregards time and space. The Buddha's Dharmakaya, the Dharma body, is all pervasive. The framework presented here goes way beyond our concepts and logical understanding. We in the West need a name to deal with the disassembling of our normal frames of reference, time and space, so we use the term metaphysical. The all-encompassing wisdom of the Buddha is not constrained by what we sentient beings are constrained and limited by.
所以这里呢，可能有一些逻辑上的问题，比如说，在经文当中提到无数千万亿种众生来至佛所而听法，那么他们这么多的众生，他们是如何到达佛所宣讲的地方？他们是乘坐了出租车，叫了 Uber， 还是在网上订了旅馆？他们到好佛到的地方的时候，他们怎么知道在哪里？到底是在地球呢，还是在另外一个星球？这些细节的问题，逻辑问题，经文并没有告诉我们答案。所以从我们西方人呢，就会讲这个是完全是超越时空限制的一种形而上的一个空间，一个时间。然后，但是我们也知道佛法身本来就是充满宇宙空间，就是无处不在变形的。所以在这个框架当中，它就在这个理论框架当中又超越了我们一般的概念以及逻辑上的理解。 所以我们日常我们普通人对佛经的理解是受限于我们自己对时空的理解，而佛的一切智慧却并不受这些时空的限制。
Additionally, the sutra narrates the entire completion of the process, right, of this event that I was talking about. Because not only did innumerable sentient beings come, but they heard the Dharma, gained peace and security, and will be freed from their obstacles and gradually enter the way. So it's a complete process. So the plasticity of time here is amazing. Are we talking about a single moment, a question of years or lifetimes? There are no boundaries. Shakyamuni Buddha may not be here physically, but his teachings are, and we need only to wake up to them.
而且呢，这个经文，另外这个经文描述的是整个成佛的过程，所以呢，不仅仅描述了整个这个听法的过程，不仅仅这个无量的众生到达了佛所宣讲的地方，而且他们还听闻了佛法，还获得了现世的安隐、后生的善处等等，而且呢，而且会离诸障碍。提到经文当中提到，所以他描述了很长的一段时间发生的事情，所以在这里可见这个时间它有很长的韧性，它这个可以随意的伸展。所以我们到底是在谈历史上的一个时间点呢，还是在谈很多年，还是在谈几生的事情？这里好像没有界限。而且这里的释迦牟尼佛也并不一定是我们所想象的是他的历史上的释迦牟尼佛，就是有这个身体的历史释迦牟尼佛，他可能已经不在那里，但是他的佛法所教导的佛法还在，我们只需要能够觉悟听闻到他的佛法。
So continuing to expound on his teaching, the Buddha declaresIt is just as the great cloud rains on all the plants, trees, thickets, forests, and medicinal herbs, and each, according to its nature and kind, equally receives the moisture so that it grows and develops. So, too, the Dharma preached by the Tathagata always has one character and flavor, namely liberation, separation, and extinction, which amounts to the attainment of all-inclusive wisdom.
所以接下来经文提到，如彼大云，雨与一切惠木丛林及诸药草，如其种性具足门润，各得生长。如来说法一相一味，所谓解脱相、离相、灭相，究竟至于一切种子。
The Buddha is clarifying the nature of his Dharma. Here he has combined the metaphor of the cloud raining on the plants of the world.And equated it directly with the Dharma that has one character and flavor. Like the simplicity of water itself, which is essential to all physical life, the Dharma underlies all life and mental activity and actions. It is hard for us to hear that it is one flavor. We tend to think in terms of vanilla or chocolate. This flavor is really beyond our ordinary sense realm.Liberation, separation, and extinction, the fruit of all-inclusive wisdom, are much more than simple labels, but are foundational to a path of deep, serious, committed practice and realization. Tasting the Dharma requires patience.
所以在这一段经文当中，佛是直接在阐述佛性。他用了这样一个比喻，就是像大雨汇集一切的丛林啊，诸药草等等，他用了这样的比喻，是直接在说，这个如来说法呢，只有一相一味，就像这个水，其实它是很简单的，但是它对所有万物的生长，确实又是至关重要的，都是一切万物生长的基本的要素，就像佛法佛性本身是最核心的东西，但是当我们听到这个一相一味的时候，我们可能有点难以理解，因为我们一想到提到味道，都会想到到底是巧克力味还是香草味的。那么这个味，一味是超越我们日常的，我们器官，我们感知器官的范围。在这里像提到离相、灭相啊，究竟至于一切种子啊，这些都是要比我们简单的味道的比喻要深一些， 而且呢要尝到佛法最终的这个一向一位呢也需要耐心。
So the Buddha continues, when living beings hear the Dharma of the Tathagata, though they embrace, read, recite, and practice it as preached, they themselves are not aware of the blessing they have received. Why? Because only the Tathagata understands the kind, the character, the embodiment, and the nature of all these living beings, what they have in mind, what they think, what they practice.He knows how they keep things in mind, how they think, and how they practice. He knows what teachings they keep in mind, what teachings they think about, what teachings they practice, and he knows by what teachings they attain what teachings.
然后佛继续说道，其有众生闻如来法，若持读诵，如说修行，所得功德，不自觉知，所以者何？唯有如来知此众生种相体性，念何事，思何事，修何事，云何念，云何思，云何修，以何法念，以何法思，以何法修，以何法得何法。
Okay, a friend of mine who's a great Dharma teacher said that this was a case of subliminal advertising. Right, the Buddha's talking about what we're not aware of.So is it a message directly to our sub or unconscious? What are we being told? One answer is that the Buddha is contrasting his awareness with our lack of awareness.
我的一个朋友说，我的一个朋友也是一个佛法老师，他跟我说，他说这一段就有点像是广告一样。这个信息是不是直接传导给我们的潜意识啊？我们到底是被传递了什么样的信息呢？有一种解答是说，佛是在比较他的觉知和众生的不觉知。
So if we listen and believe what the Buddha is saying, then whoever we are, there is a particular practice for us individually. The teachings cast a wide and penetrative net. The Buddha even knows by what teachings we attain what teachings. I love that phrase. Nonetheless, the Buddha recognizes that we don't know this. That's why we read sutras and attend Dharma lectures.
但是我们如果仔细的听，理解，相信这段经文所讲的内容的话，不管我们是谁，不管我们是在哪一个修行的层面，我们佛都有办法让我们受益，所以他的摄受的范围非常广泛，而且佛甚至于很清楚的知道你可以以何法得何法。这个非常有意思，而且佛还认识，就是意识到我们并不自知啊，这就是为什么我们需要听闻经，需要听经，听佛法讲座等等。
I'm sure this is a topic for several Dharma talks, enumerating the blessings, the merits, gifts, and teachings that are available with Buddhist practice. So briefly, just to name a few.We've all received human births, and as many sutras explain, this is quite a blessing in itself. We have access to the teachings, good friends, and Buddhist temples and centers. Indeed, the state of our bodies, qualities of mind, abilities, and dispositions are all the result of merits. The list goes on and on for Kalpas.
所以这个话题啊，其实可以展开，作为好几次的这个佛法讲座来讲。比如说我们作为人生，我们在修行佛法已经接受到了很多很多的功德啊、祝福啊，还有佛法。简单来说，我们能够有这个人在这一世获得人生，就像很多佛经提到的，本身就是一个很大的福报。我们能够听闻佛法，能够有好朋友，还有这个道场给我们修行，已经是有很多很多的福报和获得了很多的东西和功德。
The Buddha, however, talks about the lack of awareness of merits and blessings that we have received. So for many of us who live in contemporary America, this is an important topic. Many of us are quite privileged, and we tend to ignore what is around us.Additionally, we may ignore the blessings that we do have and grumble that we don't have more. More money, a better car, a better job, higher social standing. We can certainly be aware of that.
所以在这里佛其实提到了我们对于我们现在是多么的幸运，多么的有福报，这一点我们其实是不自知的。我们生活在当代的美国，其实这是一个很重要的话题，因为其实我们是有很多的福报，但是我们就是没有意识到，就是有些时候都不自知，我们有这些福报。而相反的呢，我们会抱怨我们没有更多的钱啊，没有更好的车，没有更好的工作或者更高的社会地位等等，我们只能够意识到这些东西。
Alternatively, we can be unaware of things that we have and can do without, not simply material things, but our views and judgments, which can make us and the people around us miserable. We can heed the Buddha's message and raise our awareness and try to stop incessantly judging, comparing, and labeling. These are the things that we visit upon ourselves and others daily. The yardsticks we use for ourselves are made out of pure samsara and ignorance. Jack Kornfield, a famous American Buddhist teacher, says that we want what we don't have, and we don't want what we do have. So if we can just switch these priorities, we'll be very happy indeed. Want what we have and don't want what we don't have.
而且另外呢，我们对很多事情啊，都是无知无觉。简单来说，不仅仅是这个我们拥有的物质的东西，包括我们有什么见解，有什么偏见啊，成见啊，还有我们的这种见解让周围的人感到很不舒服或者对他们带来烦恼的，我们应该听取佛给我们的建议，而提高我们自知自觉的能力，而不要再不停的评头论足啊，比较啊，或者贴标签啊，给我们和我们周围的人造成困扰。而我们使用的这些评头论足评判的标准呢，实际上都是出于无明和对这个娑婆世界的贪着。就像一个著名的美国的佛法老师也提到，他说我们想要的呢我们没有，我们不想要的呢我们有。所以如果我们能把我们自己的价值排列顺序换一下的话，我们就会非常的开心。比如说我们想要的都是我们已经拥有的，而我们没有的我们也不想要，那你就很开心了。
If we take the Buddha's words to heart, then we can begin to recognize his merits and the help he provides us through teaching, practice, and sharing. With faith in an unobstructed path of our own, we can gradually walk the path of the Buddha.
所以我们应该真正的听释迦牟尼佛给我们的建议，并且开始意识到他的功德和他能够通过佛法来对我们的帮助，我们来听闻佛法，来修行，来分享佛法。
So it's very important to keep in mind an important section right at the beginning of the passage I just read, where it says, when living beings hear the Dharma of the Tathagata, though, and these are the words, embrace, read, recite, and practice the Dharma. This passage occurs many times in other sutras, embrace, read, recite, and practice. Sometimes the language says understand and uphold, but it's a definite progression.
所以有一点非常重要，大家一定要谨记的，就是就像这一段开始的时候所提到的经文说到，若持读诵如说修行，所得功德不自觉知这就像很多的佛法的经文当中都会提到的持啊，读诵啊，还有如说修行。
So each of these steps is very important and not to be ignored or taken lightly. And once again, as I said, one of the things I wanted to do in this talk is show how the sutra is more than a collection of facts and data. It's a guide. So these particular things enumerate a path of what the Japanese scholar Taitetsu Uno called somatization. In other words, embodying, having it fill you up. So that is to truly embody and reflect the teaching such that it is practiced throughout mind and body. This is a process of merit making. One can both internalize and externalize the message of the sutra. with both body and mind, the sutra can be received, understood, experienced, adopted, and then passed on and shared. Thus, we can bring our awareness to the whole process of assimilating the sutra. Much like the Diamond Sutra, Buddhas and Bodhisattvas emerge from here.
所以就像很多语言所阐述的读诵经典持诵经典还有如说修行等等是非常重要的。在这里一遍一遍提醒不仅仅是说佛经只是一些信息分享而已，它其实是有对我们的修行和日常生活是有很具体的指导步骤和指导意义的。就像一个日本的禅师日本的学者所提到的，我们要能够真正的用我们的身心来够体现佛法能够执行佛法在这样才会有真正的功德，才会有功德聚集。那么我们必须首先要内化佛法对我们的教化，然后呢再用身心来体现外化的体现佛经所对我们的教化。那么这样子才会让我们的意识层面真正的吸收了佛法的教义，并且才真正的佛菩萨才会从经文当中涌现。
The Buddha continues with his message of assurance. Living beings live in a variety of circumstances. Only the Tathagata sees these situations clearly and understands them without hindrance. Trees, thickets, forests, and the herbs do not know whether their own nature is superior, middling, or inferior. The Tathagata knows that this is a dharma of one character and flavor, namely liberation, separation, and extinction, an ultimate nirvana of everlasting tranquility, which ends in emptiness. The Buddha, knowing all this and observing the predilections of living beings, guides and protects them. For this reason, he does not immediately teach them all-inclusive wisdom.
所以佛继续讲到，众生住于种种之地，唯有如来如实见之，了明了无碍。如彼会目丛林、诸药草等，而不自知上中下性，如来知是一相一位之法。所谓解脱相、离相、灭相，究竟涅槃常寂灭相，终归于空。佛之是以观众生心欲而将护之，是故不及为说一切种之。
It is very important to note that the Buddha is very aware of differences, not as a matter of judgment, but as an understanding of the minds of ordinary sentient beings. He alludes to the fact that plants and trees don't have conceptions of social rank, strength, or intelligence, yet they equally benefit from the nourishment that the earth provides. That the Dharma is of one character and flavor means that we can have faith in its effectiveness in walking the Dharma path. The path ends in emptiness, which means non-attachment to self and non-attachment to all phenomena. We can be content with where we are in the practice, but we can never really embrace, believe, or attach to any benchmarks or realizations or conceptions about what we have experienced. This is why the Buddha tells us that he cannot convey his all-inclusive wisdom to ordinary sentient beings. He knows that we can't have or handle everything at once, not until we become Buddhas.
所以在这里是很重要的，需要注意到，佛是非常清楚、非常了然的知道众生的差异性，但这种他对众生的根基的劣根的差异的评价，并不是一种分别性的评断，而是他只是明白众生所处的情况是不一样的，所以他就说到了，就像花草树木，它并没有什么社会位阶的高下呀，或者智力上的迟钝呢，但所有的花草树木都可以从大地当中提取到养分，能够成长一样，所以佛法也是一向一味的。所以我们可以对他升起信心，我们最终走向的是一样的道路，但是并且最终这条大道将我们导向的是空性，终归于空，但是呢，我们不能一下子的来 宣说这个一切种子，因为众生基于不同的状况和根基还不能一下子来接受，最终我们是要放下我执和法执。
As the Buddha began with praising Kashyapa, so he ends the prose part of the sutra. Kashyapa, you and the others have something most rare. You can understand that the Dharma preached by the Tathagata is appropriate, and you have faith in it and embrace it. Why is this so rare? Because the Dharma preached by the Buddha, the World Ardent One, according to what is appropriate, is difficult to comprehend and is difficult to understand.
所以正文部分呢，最后释迦牟尼佛就这样结尾说道：汝等迦舍，甚为稀有，能知如来随意说法，能信能受，所以者何？诸佛世尊随意说法，难解难知。
So the Buddha extends recognition to Kashyapa for his understanding and his works. He explains how rare this gift is to have faith and embrace the teachings, which is so difficult to comprehend. Of course, the Buddha is talking about comprehension of the one great vehicle, not simply sitting in meditation, reading a little, and maintaining a daily practice. However, if you try to understand the Buddha's practice, and the Buddha's great vehicle, small efforts like what I just talked about, sitting and reading sutras, they are very important, and they're not apart from the same path that guided Kashyapa.
所以佛在最后是在肯定和赞叹，迦舍尊者这个他对佛宣讲的甚深法义、佛身这个理解，是一个甚为稀有的一件事情，因为这个甚深的佛圣法义不是那么容易理解和信受的。当然佛在这里是指的这个一圣，而不是简单的是说我们坐禅啊，或者读诵经典，或者有一个做个日诵早课这样的修行是很难。但是如果你能为了能够理解佛的最终的法义，这些平时我们能够力所能及做的，比如说坐禅啊、读经啊、日诵早课、早晚课啊，这些都是非常重要的，因为这和最后的大道都是殊途同归，是不分开的。
Okay, the last part of this chapter is in verse, and as throughout the entire sutra, the verse elaborates and enhances what was imparted in the prose section. So I want to bring attention to one stanza from this verse section to close my talk. And that is this gatha, this verse, which says, in this way, Kashyapa, the Dharma preached by the Buddha is just like the great cloud's rain of one flavor, which enriches human flowers so that each will bear fruit.
正文部分结束之后，接下来就是偈言。偈言部分就是再一次重复和加深佛所在这一品当中所宣说的法义。那么在这里呢，我也快结束了我今天的讲座，我就想提一段比较重要的偈言。他说到：如是迦舍，佛所说法譬如大云，以一味雨润于人华，各得城堡。
This passage comes very close to the end of the chapter, just a few verses away. It is a lovely summarization of the whole chapter, and I want to point out the phrase that appears in this passage, which in Chinese is renhua, human flower, right? Man next to flower, or person next to flower. The Buddha began by speaking of the natural world of flora, plants, and trees, which receive life-giving rain. He likens his teaching to the rain of Dharma, nourishing and helping sentient beings. In this last passage, of course, as a literary trope, he has combined the two to become human flowers.
我特别想提到这一段偈言，是因为这段偈言首先是在这一品的非常最后的几句偈言当中提到的，已经是很靠后的，可以理解为是对整个一品的一个很好的总结。而且我特别想提到其中的一个两个字，就是人华，润于人华。人就是中文当中的人然后华就是可以理解为花的意思。所以在这里，因为整个一品佛一直在说，用这个比喻，用这个大雨，雨是水，雨水怎样滋润了花草树木，来比喻佛法是如何滋润和帮助众生的。
So, Gene Reeves, who is the translator, this is the book, of the edition that I use for my talk, and he actually just passed away this past May, unfortunately. But he gave a lecture, which was on YouTube, that I listened to, where he pointed out that this, throughout the Lotus Sutra in Chinese, it really refers to itself as Fa Hua Jing, right? So the Dharma Flower Sutra. That's how the sutra actually refers to itself. And the term Lotus Sutra came from the 19th century when a Frenchman first translated it into French, and then it was later translated into English. So that's why the Lotus stuck. One thing that the Professor Reeves pointed out in his lecture is that hua, which means flower, can also be a verb. So it can mean flowering. So ren hua could be translated as human flowering. And so we can all personally flower, studying the Dharma Flower Sutra and walking the Buddha path. Thank you.
所以在最后我想提到 Gene Rivers 这个翻译者就是我这本书的 法华经的翻译者，我所用的版本的翻译者呢， 他其实提到了这个法华经被翻译成英文的一个渊源，这位作者呢五月份刚刚去世，他提到了如果你要字面直译法华经的话，在英语当中应该是直译成法华经，但是现在在英文当中是直译成 莲花，就是直接对应的话叫莲花经 Lotus Sutra。 之所以这样翻译的原因，是因为当法华经第一次翻译成外国语言的时候，它第一次是翻译成法语，在19世纪先翻译成法语，然后从法语来翻译到英语的。所以呢，这位教授呢就提到，他认为这个法华经啊，最后提到的人华，其实这个华跟花谐音。 不仅仅可以理解为一个名词，也可以把花理解为一个动词，就是下花语的意思。所以他认为这个人华可以作为动词来理解，是说所有学习法华经和修行坚持走这个菩就佛的道路的这个人呢，都可以是认为是在下花语。就这样，好，今天我的讲座就到此结束。